This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila.
And we are the Spy Fat Chicks.
And right now we're at the Second Cup on the corner of Hickson and Dundas and Whitby. I kind of like the spots. We're in like the corner of the coffee shop. At the corner of the street. So we can see like all the traffic, all the stores. It's nice if you're nosy. I am. We're at a pub in the exact same location with beer instead of coffee.
Yes.
But this isn't a pubcast. We're going to talk about pubs. Kind of. But first, this is going to be a two-parter, and we're going to talk about a restaurant review, a quick one, and then we're going to also do a media review, a book review. So first up is Dine's Restaurant in Oshawa, across the street from the center.
It's on King and Gibbons.
It's in the same little center where there's a Mary Brown chicken place. There's a nifty little used DVD and CD store called Deja Vu Discs. It has an awesome selection, by the way. They sell games, too.
I got a copy of Shawshank Redemption and Demon Knight there for under $20 for the two of them.
Very cool. We highly recommend them. So, Dines. We had asked around when we moved into the area about it because it looked cool. It seemed like a kind of home cooking place you go with your kids after a ball game kind of place. But we wanted to make sure. And everybody we really talked to was like, oh, I haven't been there in 10 years. I don't know. It might have changed. No, I haven't been there since they moved location 20 years ago.
Right.
So,
I mean, I'd been there once as a kid, but I couldn't remember really even what I ordered, so.
So we decided to take a gamble. We were hungry. We were tired. We had just finished playing Lumberjack at Sheila's mom's place, and neither one of us really wanted to cook that night. And it's a cute little place.
It's kind of like a sports bar, but for, like, kids' teams.
Yeah.
Like, they do serve beer there so that when you get back, the coach can have a sudsy, but.
Yeah, they have a full-service bar when you walk in, and it's a cute little place. There's lots of booths, lots of tables. And it reminds me of so many family-style restaurants where I grew up. Like, Burtswood and Indian and those kinds of places.
They have, like, Ambridge written all over it.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. It's a cute little place when you walk in. Decent amount of seating. Very clean. Very polished inside.
Yeah.
But it's not scary. You don't walk in and say, oh, I can't afford to eat here. You feel very at ease right away. Mm-hmm. So definitely two thumbs up on the decor. The menu is a good family-style restaurant. A little bit of everything.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, they have burgers and fries and chicken fingers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We actually ordered the Montreal smoked meat sandwiches because we're easy for that.
We were tired. And that was the one thing. We looked at the menu and everything looked good, but we both said, that sounds really good.
So we ordered the Star, which is like the Montreal smoked meat sandwich with fries and coleslaw.
With enough fries to choke an elephant.
Fresh hand cut action, mm-hmm. Nice and crispy, fluffy on the inside.
Good fries.
So Tracy grabs the coleslaw, throws it on her sandwich, throws the French fries on.
I didn't do that right away. We ordered our sandwiches came, and they were decently sized. I'd say on a scale of the Aaron scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being stuff silly even for Aaron, and 1 being you're looking around saying, where's the rest of it? I would put this in right around, without the fries, it would have been right around a 3.
Yeah.
With the fries, it bumps it up to a 4 because there's so many fries. Because a sandwich is a decent size. It's what you should eat.
Yeah.
It's not what you want to eat.
Yeah, it's like the pieces of bread are that oblong shaped. It's the same
size as deli bread.
Like deli bread. It's it's not pumpernickel, but that's what the size of the bread pieces are like.
It's like almost like an Italian kind of deli bread. It's not quite rye. It was really good.
Yeah.
It was just that with a hearty pile of the Montreal smoked meat on it, which was very good meat.
Yeah.
And just your sandwich. It comes with a slice of sweet pickle on the side and then the fries and the coleslaw, like you said before. I just like repeating everything you say because you're so good.
It's so nice. You gotta say it twice.
You gotta say it twice. And the coleslaw was the delicious vinegar coleslaw of doom. You can get it with mustard on it. I opted without the mustard. I ate half my sandwich. And I just looked down at my plate with the tasty, tasty vinegar coleslaw and the tasty, tasty fresh cut fries. And if they're not fresh cut, they do a great imitation of being so. And I just looked and said, I can't resist it. It'll be perfection. Pulled the top of my sandwich off, rearranged the meat so it was nice and flat. Do you know how when you get a deli meat sandwich, it's usually all piled in the middle?
Yeah.
It's anywhere you go, they always
do that.
It's
like a handful that they just kind of cram onto there.
Yeah, so I rearranged it so it was a little flatter, heaped some coleslaw on top of it, threw a couple fries on it, had like a nice layer of fries, and it was like being home.
It was like Permanti's.
Permanti needs a Montreal smoked meat sandwich. That's all there is to it. It was great, though. And their coleslaw was perfect. Just crunchy enough. They gave you a good handful of it. And it was, the whole thing was right around what? The Star was about $10?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the regular sandwich is like 6.
Yeah, 6 or 7. So it's reasonably priced. Everything on the menu was reasonable. It's definitely a family place. You can feed your kids there. They have a kids menu, I think.
Yeah. Well, they have, like, little trophies around from the different leagues that they've sponsored. And
the service was wonderful. Very prompt, very helpful. I was entertained by the fact that when we sat down, the first thing out of her mouth was, do you need menus or do you not know what you want yet?
Yeah.
Said, no, we need menus. We've never been here before. So if you're there all the time, you don't even have to get a menu. They'll just take your order right away, which was cool. Unless that's just our specific waitress. And we went to pay, and the type of bank card that we have is something called a chip card up here. In our particular bank's chip card is notorious for not playing well with certain types of machines. Most banks don't have this problem. It's just our bank in general.
Yep.
And we, every once in a while, we go someplace, we run into problems with it. Once we find some place that we go to regularly where we know the card doesn't work right, we just make sure we have cash after that point.
Yeah.
It's such a headache.
But the weirdness, like the super weirdness part of it is, we have a joint bank account because we're married.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Tracy's card won't work, but mine will.
Yes.
Or vice versa.
Well,
or it will work in one of their machines.
But not the other.
But not the other machine. But
yes.
It's the same type of machine.
And
it's totally random and weird.
It's completely random and very bizarre. But we ran into that problem at Dines, and the girl was so cool about it.
Yeah.
She let me run down to the ATM down the strip from it in that little mini mall area.
I was collateral.
I left Sheila there, so they knew I wasn't leaving, so I could get cash to pay. They were really cool. They take everything, Visa, MasterCard, Interact, cash, obviously. I don't think they take checks, but still. And I might as well just say it. If you have a Scotiabank chip card, you may have run into a problem there. You might want to take cash with you. And it's not the restaurant's fault at all. It's the Scotiabank card.
Yeah.
It just doesn't play well with others. So overall, I really like the place. It's very close to where we live, which is also an added plus for us. I see us eating there many, many times. I want to try their burgers.
Their burgers looked awesome.
They had a female burger. It was like
yeah,
a burger.
It was like the ultimate Canadian burger. So it had
cheddar cheese.
Cheddar
and
cheese, female.
And a burger.
The only thing that would make it better is if they threw a fried egg on it.
Oh, jeez. I don't think you need it with the burger and the female.
Protein.
As we run into things there that sound even more irresistible, we'll let everybody know. They had a nice dessert menu, too, with lots of pies on it.
Yeah, I wanted to try their wings, but I was really in the mood for a smoked meat sandwich.
Yes, we just wanted something that was easy to eat, because we were so tired.
Yeah.
So
we removed some hedges for my mom, so.
Yes, we were pretending
to be
lumberjacks.
You know, when you say, oh, no problem, that'll only be like half an hour, and then
six hours later.
Yeah.
But it got done. Your mom's happier. The mosquito magnets are gone, so we're happier. So
yep.
When we go over, we won't get eaten alive. It's all good. Anything else you want to add about Dines?
I don't think so. Give it a try if you're in the neighborhood.
Definitely.
It's been around forever, and with good reason. Like, usually places that stick around that long that are a fixture, there's a decent reason why they're there, so you should go in and check it out.
Yes. I'm excited we found a good place for a Montreal smoked meat that's close, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we had been scouting around and hadn't really found anything satisfactory yet, so.
Yeah.
Very, very happy with that. And for people in the States who haven't had Montreal smoked meat yet, don't be afraid of it. It honestly, think of the meat you get on an Arby's sandwich, but make it good and not processed.
Yeah.
And that's what Montreal smoked meat is like. It's like what an Arby's sandwich should be.
All it is it's a smoked brisket that's been sliced really thin.
And it's
I know that it's kind of scary because it's a very general name. It's Montreal smoked meat. But what kind of meat?
Is it like pressed frog legs? You don't know.
Or is it like city chicken?
Yeah.
In Pittsburgh? Is it like you're going to call it something when really it's something else? So it's very tasty. If you like brisket.
If you like brisket, if you like sliced roast beef in general, you'll
yeah.
really like it. If you like corned beef. So it reminds me a little bit of corned beef. Like if you get
yeah.
corned beef from the deli.
Yeah, definitely.
Very similar taste to it. So on to the media end of the episode. This is so exciting.
I know. I'm super excited to read the rest of these.
Yes.
So we found this manga called Oishinbo. It's Oishinbo. And this is from the A La Carte series. Tracy was reading it, and apparently there's hundreds of issues of this manga. But these particular collections are excerpts from the series.
The best of the best.
Yeah, exactly. That are all kind of fall under one umbrella. Like this one is the pub food one. Of course I had to pick that one, right? And it's the last one in the collections.
I think there's about 12
series.
Of them in the collection. Somebody had recommended it to us. We had ran across it online and said, that sounds really good. Tossed it on our Goodreads list a while ago, months ago. And we just happened to be in Chapters, had some extra cash. We were by the manga section. And we said, hey, they have it. They didn't have the whole series. They only had 4 or 5 of them. But the one that jumped out to Sheila was, of course, the pub food. I think they also had the ramen one and
rice.
Rice.
And I think they also had a sake one.
I think they had the sake one, because it came down to the pub food one or the sake one, and you went with the pub food. Now, I like manga, usually. What I don't like about manga is it can be very expensive for what you get. Usually you get a manga, you can blow through in under an hour, and you paid about $10 for it. One of the things that I really enjoyed about this book in general was that, yes, it was $17 Canadian. It was almost, what, 250 pages?
Yeah.
Just over 250
pages. It's trade paperback sized.
It's huge. And it took me, what, a day and a half to plow through it?
Yeah.
It was dense. You actually got your money's worth out of it, which is what you don't get with a lot of manga. Yeah.
Well, it was a fiction, but it was a solid nonfiction as well, because it gave you lots of great information.
It even comes with a recipe.
Yeah, it came with recipes.
Fish sardine cake.
I'm a very visual person, and the reason why it took me so long to read it was because I was sitting there looking at the detail in all the pictures, because you could tell that the fellow that wrote it and
drew it. I can't say their name, so I'm going to butcher it. You can probably.
The story is by Tetsu Kariya, and the art is by Akira Hanasaki. So you can tell by Hanasaki-san's work that he's working from life, which would have been an awesome assignment to be sitting there in all these Japanese pubs, which are incidentally called
drawing plate after plate of food.
Izakaya. Sitting in the izakaya, drawing plate after plate of food and consuming beer after beer or sake after sake.
Yes.
Because the pictures are just amazing. They're very lifelike.
Oh,
they're very detailed.
The dishes look like they're out of a cookbook.
He did such
a good job of it. And Sheila said it's fiction, but there's a storyline. What it is there's this newspaper that's writing the ultimate menu. And
it's like a Japanese heritage culture project for the newspaper.
Yes, and they're following Yamaoka Shiro, is the main character?
Yeah.
Yamaoka Shiro. He's running around, he's in charge of doing this ultimate menu for the newspaper. So these are little stories of him discovering new recipes, creating new recipes, interacting with other people, how food's relating to life. And it's got a little bit of a philosophical tilt to it, too.
Yeah.
In some of it, especially the part where they're trying to name his new kids, his twins.
Yeah.
And he's trying to say how he wants to name his son, so.
That's why I figured out that it was kind of from a bigger picture, because the chapter before, he was not really even dating the chick, and then in the next chapter, they're having twins.
Wow, they move fast in Japan. So, it has a neat story arc that ties it all together. Each little chapter is a different dish, usually, or a different type of dishes, set of dishes, and it has its own little story to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
We have in this one, I'll just run through the dishes, edamame, sardines, there was an eel one, there was a potato one, sake, there was a couple others that were just little dishes put together, types of dishes, so they weren't like a specific...
Yeah, it was like pub food in general, like what you would generally find in a Japanese pub.
Now, and it's chock full of new information that I had no idea about, like edamame. Apparently, the best edamame is actually black. This is a neat little story in the beginning that I'm not ruining anything. You still want to read it. It's so cool.
This is the first story in the book, and it's really short, so...
Yeah. But they'd gone to this beer hall because the guy there is a master pourer. He apparently can pour the perfect beer every time, where you have the perfect ratio of foam to beer, and the foam keeps the beer in so the carbonation doesn't go flat.
Yeah.
And they went to, the main character went with his friends to see this perfect pourer, master pourer, and the guy had quit because he had run into problems with the fellow who bought the place, the new corporate dude. So they hunt him down to find out what happened, and they end up having to go to the corporate guy, and it turns out the master brew guy told the corporate guy, hey, I'm going to serve you the best edamame you've ever had. So he goes and gets a special edamame for him. The corporate guy goes to open it, and he sees that the beans are black, and he said, oh, you're serving me rotten edamame, how could you? And like flies into a rage, so the other guy quits. Turns out that there's this one type of edamame that's just supposed to be divine, and the beans
look
like they're rotten, but they're not. They're fresh.
Yeah.
And edamame goes great with everything, but it's supposed to be really good with beer. We've only ever had the roasted edamame with beer at home.
I was just reading the book. I just couldn't help but thinking about fantasizing being in Japan, eating all that great pub food, drinking some Kirin or Asahi, nice great big mugs of frosty beer.
There's also an eel episode in here, or not episode, but an eel chapter in here that all I could think of was Sheila when I read it.
I love barbecue
eels so much.
It's weird, I don't know. I'm a great big weirdo.
And they end up going to this eel restaurant, which I bet there's something like this that actually exists. This has to be rooted in truth. Whether or not the place is still there, because some of these were written back in the 70s and 80s, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the fellow, he specializes in using the whole eel. You go to eat there, you eat the whole eel. But it's all cooked in a different way, each section. So it tastes different, it has its own flavors.
Yeah. It's nose to tail dining, which is, you know, everything that's old is new again, right?
Yes. And it's popular now.
Nose to tail dining is becoming a big thing. It goes along with the locavore.
For me, the biggest thing to overcome, I think, is going to be the innards, because I'm just not a guts person. I know if they're prepared right, I'll like them, but I've had so many things that have been prepared badly, like tripe.
Yeah.
You know, you prepare it badly, it's going to taste bad, and it's going to be chewy. And that's a texture issue for me, so I'm sure I'm going to run into innards someday that I'm actually going to really like because they taste
well,
good.
Well, someday when we go to Japan, I have no problem at all putting myself in the hands of those that prepare the eel from, I guess, nose to fin.
Mm-hmm.
Because they take their cuisine so seriously, and there is definitely a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And if you do it the wrong way, you don't get to touch the eel.
Exactly.
You're not allowed to use the knives. Just go into the back, just wash the dishes some more.
And right now I'm restraining myself from talking more about eel because the book I just read that we're going to do another episode on.
But I've learned even more. What's the name of the book?
A Year of Dangerous Eating by Tomer Parker Bowles. And it surprised me at how good it was. We're definitely going to do the next episode on it. But there's a whole chapter about eels, about baby eels. And I learned more about eels than I ever thought I'd know. And there's so much crazy stuff.
What's the guy's name again?
Thomas Parker Bowles, yes.
Who is the son of?
Duchess of Cornwall's son. Yeah.
Camilla Parker Bowles.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's actually her son, but he's really struggled hard to establish himself as a food critic, not I'm this chick's son.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be known as their son. He wants to be introduced as, you know, I'm a food critic who writes for this particular newspaper magazine in Britain. So he doesn't trade on that at all. But anyway, the book's
fantastic.
It's just
a neat piece of trivia for me.
It's a neat piece of trivia. I didn't even realize it when we bought it.
I understand why people want to make their own name. I mean, that's why Nicolas Cage changed his last name so that people wouldn't be judging him on
his father.
His father,
Francis
exactly.
Ford Coppola, exactly. But that's in the future. We're going to dedicate a whole episode to that book because it's as good as Good, Fair, and Cheerful in England. It's one of those books that's going on my top five for culinary books. It's so well written, so informative. It dispels a lot of myths.
Nice.
And it even introduces, I think, a few more interesting tidbits that should be common food trivia, especially the stuff about the eels.
Yeah.
Because it worries me about the sustainability of eating eel. And the Japanese have a lot to do with that, because their hunger
eel crazy.
For eel is so extreme that it's almost throwing the eel, not economy,
off.
But the ecosystem out of whack. But, back to the eel chapter. I can't have enough good things to say about this series. I can't wait to pick the rest of it up.
Yeah, and we'll probably do either
after this, we'll do
put
it in pairs.
Some episodes, or we'll make sure and read a couple of them and do a review on a couple of the books.
Now, if anybody listening to this happens to know if the original series is translated anywhere, let us know. I'm going to do a little digging to see if the original stuff is, because I'd like to try to lay hands on that if it's translated. If there's no translated editions, I'm not going to bother, because
I don't read Japanese.
As ambitious as I am, I don't think I could learn Japanese to the degree I need to be able to read the manga.
Oh god, there's one character in there.
Oh,
what's
the
name?
American fellow. Oh, let me look it up.
He's like an American businessman, and
he's a diplomat, actually. And he speaks, they translate it into what he would be saying
Japanese.
In Japanese. And his grammar is atrocious.
There's lots of me's instead of I's. And
yeah, I can't find him right now. It's hilarious.
He's the one that he has to take his boss out to a Japanese restaurant to impress him.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way this guy speaks, they figure, well, he's going to be Arthur.
That's his
because
name.
Of the way Arthur speaks, he must have a boss that doesn't know much more about Japanese cuisine than him. So they tell him to go to this yakitori place that's actually called Yakitori, which is pretty, like, safe Western, safe for Western palates Japanese food. So they get there, and his boss speaks flawless Japanese, and he's like, why did you bring me here? Don't you know that I lived in Japan as a young man, and you insult me? And it ends up going very badly for poor old Arthur, and then
and that's where the fellow from the newspaper, Shiro,
they make it right.
Ends up coming to the rescue and saying, hey, we've got this place your boss is really going to like. It's going to secure your promotion. It's this eel place. And they take him to an eel place, and he's really impressed. The eel place where they do nose to tail, and he's really impressed with how different it is, because he'd never had anything like it, even when he lived in Japan before.
Yeah.
And I just happened to flip to the one page where there's the poster about how, what part of the eels you do what with, and disassembling it. It's so cool looking. I mean, visually, the whole book is a treat.
Yeah.
So much coolness.
And it makes you want to go for Japanese.
Yes.
Like I needed any more motivation for that, right?
So, the Saki chapter scared me a little bit, because I imagined you trying to do it exactly like it was in the book, where it has to be so many degrees, and...
I'm more of a live and let live person. It's very interesting to know. Well, and there's like so many different myths and legends and misinformation, because
you shouldn't eat it warm, drink it warm. You should drink it warm.
Right, exactly.
If you drink it warm, it's warm to cover up the impurities in the sake, and you're obviously not drinking good quality sake, which is incorrect.
Yeah. I mean, they took a very good sake in there, the Junmai level of sake, and they warmed it up, mm-hmm. but it was like, they warmed it to a specific temperature to bring out the best in that sake.
Because apparently each sake has a temperature to which it's served best, and not every sake just goes to a certain temperature. And, you know, you don't want it to be scalding hot. You want it to be pleasantly warmed through.
Exactly.
But you'll run into people who...
They think they know everything.
From a friend of a friend of a friend, they were told, oh, don't drink it warm or don't drink it cold.
Or the only way to drink sake is warm.
Yeah.
Or... whatever.
Well, think of that creepy, cloudy stuff that you like.
Oh, the nigori?
Yeah, it's unfiltered.
Yeah.
And that's meant to be drank cold. If you heat it up, I'm sure it loses a lot of what makes it taste supposedly good.
It's amazing. It's got nice floral notes.
This is where our tastes differ. But that was obviously a type of sake that was not being served in that chapter. So, Oshinbo, fantastic book, the pug food one. We're looking forward to the rest of the series. If you are an Asian file or Japanese file, you really like anything about Japanese food and culture, you want to try to pick it up. It's in print now. It's going to be really easy to lay hands on.
Yeah.
You wait a couple years to start looking for it, and with the way manga goes, you may have a harder time finding it.
Yeah. They seem to go in waves, like peaks and valleys. Mm-hmm. You might be able to get it from your local library. If you haven't read any manga before, here's the deal with it. They don't print usually like a regular book. If they do print it like a regular book, that means they flip the images, mm-hmm. so it may not look exactly the way the artist intended.
Yeah.
If it's just a direct translation, you start at the what would be the back, open up the book to the first page, and your comic panels are going to go from the top right, go over to the left, and then go down to the next panel in the middle, start from the right, go over to the left.
Yeah. And even the bubbles go that way.
Exactly.
Normally we read right to left. The speech bubbles go right to left when you read a comic book. With this, it's the exact opposite. It takes you a couple pages.
Left to right.
Yeah, we do left to right.
We do left to right. Instead of right to left.
I'm sorry. Well, they do right to left.
Right.
We do left to right. And it'll take you a couple pages to kind of get in the groove. Once you read a few pages in a row, you'll be ready to go. I find reading manga is the kind of thing that you don't sit down and read two or three pages and stop. You read 30 or 40 pages at a pop, at least.
Yeah.
Because it's just, once you get into the groove, you don't want to break it. It's a little harder if you keep going back and forth. Mm. But it's not a big deal. Most of them now will tell you when you buy it on the back, what we would think of as the
front of the cover.
Front cover, but it's actually the back. It'll tell you if it reads right to left. They'll have a little symbol there. So they do try to help you out. And if you're not sure, just browse through it. If you're confused as to what's going on, try reversing how you're reading it. You'll probably realize that it's one that reads.
A bunch of the Tokyo Pop ones, when you open them up to the first page, it says, stop.
Yes.
You're at the end of the book. Flip it over and start at the beginning.
And surprisingly, this isn't a Tokyo Pop one.
No, it's Viz, which actually does. Yeah. Are they the ones that do Full Metal Alchemist?
I don't know. I thought Tokyo Pop did them too.
Maybe you're right.
Well, anyway.
Anyway.
I think I'm about done with Oshinbo for now. So, this is Tracy.
And this is Sheila from Where's My Fat Chicks. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed this Five Fat Chicks podcast. Please add us as a friend on MySpace and or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Please email your comments, questions, or suggestions to zweifatchicks@gmail.com. That's zweifatchicks@gmail.com. Our theme music is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod. Our podcasts, like Mr. MacLeod's music, are protected under a Creative Commons attribute copyright. You can make copies of our shows and share them with friends, but please make sure that credit is given. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you have a great day.